Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 121 of the Savager and Credit Sports Podcast. Here for you on another Wednesday night, 7:20 p.m. on November 30th. After a week off, we are back after, you know, stuffing our faces with food and all that good Thanksgiving stuff. We are back in business. Unfortunately, I'll just get out of the way now like we did before the last time we recorded. We actually have to take next week off as well due to a work conflict that I have and not being able to find a day to reschedule. So just a heads up, unfortunately, we're going to have to do no show again next week, but hopefully after that we'll be all good to, you know, your regularly scheduled programming. But before we get into anything, I know you've been dealing with some technical difficulties, so I think I know your answer, but how are we doing?
Other than that, I'm doing great. Just fucking the goddamn technical difficulties, man. We can't stay away from them. I've been on my email and my Google account all day getting ready to do this with the outline and everything. And now, of course, 5 minutes before we have to go on, my email craps the bed. I have to do some sort of security verification. So now I'm going to try to do the show with the outline off of my phone. So if it looks awkward for anybody watching and listening, and if this is a struggle, I apologize, but this is what I'm dealing with right now. Other than that, though, Thanksgiving was good. I'm sure yours was as well, as you said. We were stuffing our faces the whole time, which is always good. Some good football games, some not so good football games. Of course, we'll get to that. Bruins, they're still great. Celtics, they're still great. And the Red Sox continue to piss me off with the latest stuff that's come out about them. So it's just another Wednesday for the most part.
Yeah. We will get to some Red Sox stuff after some football moments of the week. Mine is another quick one. Like, I feel like a lot of mine have been recently. The whole steroid boy comments from Travarius Ward to DeAndre Hopkins. Now DeAndre Hopkins wants to box Travarius Ward for that. I really took it personally. It's just the type of stuff that happens that's really goofy and it gives me a laugh, so I figured it was worth mentioning.
Absolutely. I thought the steroid boy comments was kind of funny too. It was kind of not really out of left field, but I mean, that I feel like a lot of people have kind of put that to bed. You know, DeAndre Hopkins served his suspension, so I think we kind of just let that, you know, go. But if Travarius Ward wants to keep bringing it up, that's all good for him. And if he wants to keep box some people, then he can do that too.
Yeah, I mean, celebrity boxing is so popular nowadays. Goofy ass shit.
Verification codes. Sorry, like I said, this is a work in progress.
Oh yeah. Wonderful.
For me, I'm just gonna go through this right now because I don't know how much longer I have before my phone signs me out too of this, and I don't have any sort of outline to go off of. I hit two moments of the week, both football related. The first one, the Commanders quote unquote statue for Sean Taylor. Obviously, with it being the 15-year, again, anniversary is not the right word. So the 15-year since the tragic death of Sean Taylor, the Commanders announced the other day that they were going to honor Taylor with a statue, when in reality, if anybody saw the picture on Twitter or, you know, any Commanders fans that were at the game went and saw it and are listening now, just a real, like, typical Commanders and Dan Snyder scumbag move. It basically ended up just being a mannequin with, like, a Sean Taylor jersey that was glassed off that people could look at. So really, like, low budget, half-assed, at least in my opinion, tribute, I guess, to the guy. You could have put
the greatest player in the history of your franchise.
Maybe. Exactly. And yeah, it's basically just like a mannequin that you would see in like a Kohl's or a Target or something. Exactly. Yeah. They just threw a Redskins, because that's what it was at the time, uniform on him and just kind of put it out there. So just typical Commanders and Dan Snyder, just half-ass and everything. And then the other one too. Exactly.
Twitter people would say.
Yeah, he's just taken so many of them lately. And then the second one, I'm sure people have seen it by now, the Twitter stuff, OBJ getting thrown off a plane. This was more so just for OBJ being an ass. Like, he was thrown off a plane because apparently he didn't want to put a seatbelt on during that plane. The flight got delayed, I think 2 hours it was, if I saw that correctly on Twitter. His agent tried saying, you know, the stewardess was being overzealous and, you know, he wasn't really doing anything wrong. Like, he was asleep, so that's a common procedure for him to be on a plane. Like, the whole thing was just stupid. Like, OBJ, put your seatbelt on. If you're one of those people that holds up a flight because you don't want to put your seatbelt on, I don't want to take your headphones off, like, don't be that guy. I'm sure you've dealt with people, shit, you're flying, hopefully this doesn't happen to you tomorrow, but you're flying out tomorrow, so, but I'm sure you've flown before, you've seen the idiots that, like, want to get on the plane right away even though it's not their time to board, the people that can't stow their overhead stuff away in the overhead bins. Like, just don't be one of those a-holes that takes up other people's time on a plane. Like, people want to get to where they're going. It's the holiday season. They want to get home or go see their family or whatever. Don't be that dick. But OBJ, you know, he does that. Now he's joking about it on Twitter, thinks it's funny. Just the whole situation. Tier 5s for me for both, just because of the idiocy of OBJ and then the scumbagness of just Dan Snyder, like you said, continuing to take L's like he so often does.
Yeah, Dan Snyder, terrible person. OBJ just being a jackass, kind of. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nothing really too surprising, unfortunately. But Jerry Jones and the Cowboys are unfazed by this. So we'll see exactly. if they end up with OBJ. I know there was a rumor going around that his driver was saying he was working on something with the Giants. So it seems like it might be down to the Giants or the Cowboys. But
all right. My money would be on the Cowboys. Like, Jerry Jones is not going to let that opportunity pass.
No, he won't.
Yep.
Xander Bogaerts, and we have an update in like the stupidest way possible these days, because mm-hmm. these types of situations happen every so often now, and sometimes they just mean nothing. But Xander Bogaerts has apparently followed the Padres on Instagram, and speculation is ramping up that maybe he's going there.
Yeah, it's this whole thing for me is just, again, we talked about this before when we did our, you know, what we thought the perfect offseason would look like, and you didn't even have Bogaerts on your list because you were under the mindset that he's gone. You're just coming to terms with that. I had him on mine, just still holding out hope, but stuff like this, like you said, it is dumb, but this is the world we live in now, where, you know, you see a guy follow somebody on social media, whether that's a player of a certain team or that team itself, like in this case, you're going to start to speculate some things. Obviously it doesn't help that you have the report out from, I believe it's Marino Pippen, Spanish play-by-play announcer, WJDA sports radio host. He tweeted this out today, and this was via the translation because it was in Spanish. He said, quote, "The Red Sox have not broken relations with Xander Bogaerts, but they are not close due to the years of the contract, of course, the ongoing negotiations. Today, however, the Padres have had the most fluid communications with their agent, Scott Boras, to obtain their services, being Xander Bogaerts." Ken Rosenthal yesterday had a tweet about the Padres as well with Bogaerts, saying, quote, "The Padres recently have reached out to Scott Boras asking if Xander Bogaerts would be open to move around the infield, including first base or second base." And for anyone that remembers, of course, when that comment came up, I believe it was last offseason, when the Red Sox were obviously talking about signing Trevor Story, and there were the talks of could Bogaerts move positions. He himself said, "I'm a shortstop. I'm not going to move because that's the position I play," or something along the lines of that. Now it seems like maybe, I don't know if Xander has backtracked on that or if that's just the Padres asking if he'd be open. As of 5 o'clock, though, as you mentioned, or right around 5 o'clock, he did follow the Padres on his Instagram account. Does still follow the Red Sox, so it wasn't like a complete, flashing lights, you know, we've reached DEFCON, whatever, for a terrible situation that he, you know, unfollowed the Red Sox. But like you said, these type of things, this day and age, something like this happens, it kind of leads you to believe that Bogaerts might be in the works of going to the Padres. And for me, if the Red Sox lose him to a team that doesn't even need a shortstop, like it's just so typical Red Sox. Again, you hear the reports about, you know, they're years off in contract talks. I've seen people say that, you know, this is the John Lester situation all over again. You're getting to that because at this point, it's just so stupid. Like, the more we wait on this, the more days this goes on. Like, this should have been locked up a while ago. We've said this before, and it's just aggravating that you see a team like the Padres who don't need a shortstop. They have Tatis. Yes, he's suspended, and he's kind of a head case. They have Machado. They have Kim, who's played there and played pretty well. They don't need a shortstop. This is them going out and saying, we need a guy that puts us over the top. They're, you know, doing their due diligence, checking in on him, and they're going for it. I don't know why the Red Sox can't follow in that mindset and bring a guy back that, you know, has obviously worked out so well here. It's just frustrating to see stuff like this. And like I said, as days goes on, and it seems like nothing is getting done or there's any sort of progress being moved towards re-signing him, I'm starting to, you know, get on the same side that you were, that it's better off probably to just sit here and think that Xander Bogaerts is gone, because I don't know if they have any interest in bringing him back at this point or what the deal is. As they just continue, it seems like, to sit on their hands and do nothing.
I don't know. Like, the Bogaerts stuff has been weird since, you know, we got into that frame of mind so long ago now that, like, he's probably going to be gone,
mm-hmm.
more likely than not. But yeah, it certainly doesn't seem promising with this whole Padres development as of late. The Jose Abreu stuff that I've seen people upset about is an interesting one, because I saw someone said, with like taxes being different in Houston, mm-hmm. the Red Sox equivalent to the offer that Houston gave him that he accepted would have had to have been like 3x75, which in that case, I'm glad they didn't do. Because that's
I'm on the opposite side.
That's a ridiculous amount of money for, I don't think he's worth that.
It is, but at this point, like, you need to, again, you need to show the fans that you're out there, you want to do something, you want to bring in an impact guy. This was the perfect guy on the market for them because it fit a need. You could obviously put him as your DH replacement if you don't want to bring back Martinez. You could have him as a guy that platoons at first base with Tristan Casas if, you know, there was some struggles with him defensively or whatnot, being Casas. Or, you know, again, we talked about before, a mentor type of guy. Abreu is a guy that's played the position well over the years. He knows how to handle himself. You know, he would have been a great guide for Casas to lean on. And then the fact too is the White Sox didn't give him a qualifying offer. So even if you signed him, you don't have to give up a draft pick, which as we've seen in the past, the Red Sox don't want to go after guys that have been given the qualifying offer to give up any sort of draft compensation. So there was a lot of reasons why Abreu was probably the biggest fit and the best fit for this team. And yeah, I've seen a lot of people say the same thing that you said, you know, the price tag was probably too high. At this point, I don't care. I want something. I want a known commodity, a guy that has had success in this league. He's an MVP. He's a multi-all-star, multi-silver slugger. Like, the guy works, and he hasn't shown any signs of slowing down in his old age. I know his power numbers were down last year, but I'm pretty sure he still hit over 300, or pretty close to it. But again, it's just a typical case, and I love that when the report came out that he was signing, John Heyman the other day had it, that, quote, Jose Abreu was Boston's number one outside target. The Red Sox met with him as soon as free agency opened. Again, to me, it's just another case of the interest Kings doing, again, their due diligence, checking in on a guy, but not really checking in on him because they didn't want to pay the price tag for him, which, again, this is the direction they're going with, you know, outside free agents, their own free agents, and Bogarts. So I don't know. Again, they can say all the right things according to people and, you know, talk about how they want to be interested in guys and want, you know, have a big splash this offseason. But as we sit here on November 30th, I know it's still early. We don't really tend to see a lot of the big moves made until the winter meetings start. You think they want to get out in front of some of these things, maybe, again, maybe overpay for a guy or two just because to do something. But they've done nothing so far except, you know, bring Rob Refsnyder back on a 1-year deal. And I think, again, continue to make some fans. Rodriguez. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep. See, that's how unforgettable that move is. And then there was somebody else they signed that day too, another minor league free agent, another no-name guy. So the moves they've made, again, it's minor moves. It's, you know, take a chance on guys and see what if it pans out or not. It's kind of where you're at right now. I know you and multiple people have said it, you wouldn't have paid the money, but you're kind of at that point right now where your team's not in that great of shape. You might have to overpay for a guy or two because, yeah, you're going up against the Astros in this if they were really interested in Abreu. And, of course, the Astros have won the World Series. They have far more talent on their roster right now than the Red Sox do, clearly. You might have to throw a couple extra bucks at Abreu to try to persuade him to come to the Red Sox over the defending World Series champions. Like, that's just where you're at right now because the talent level is just – it's leaps and bounds different. So, it's just something that – it bugs me. It doesn't seem like they're really, even though the reports are out there, I don't know how realistic it was that they really checked in on him, but I don't know. Until they do something substantial or make any sort of move that is worthwhile to me or to anybody else, then I'll believe these type of things or, you know, get excited. But right now, not feeling too great about this offseason. And then the Bogart stuff today too, just really compounded everything and how, again, this offseason could be very quickly heading down the toilet.
Yeah, I get you. I'm in a different camp. I'm waiting until after winter meetings get done and like a little bit of time passes before.
Fair enough. You are usually the more optimistic of the two of us when it comes to that stuff. You take the wait and see, or, you know, kind of I'll hang on with them until they give me a reason not to approach, which I respect you for. It's a good approach to have, but I don't know. I've seen the story too many times the last couple of years that, you know, they want to go out and do something and then they don't. So I don't know. It's very frustrating.
I feel you.
On the bright side, though, I did get my outline back up on my laptop, so I'm not trying to scroll through my phone and, you know, F around with a bunch of stuff. So there's a positive.
There we go.
Yep.
Progress.
Mm-hmm.
Patriots?
Sure. Yeah, let's do that. Try to get back on the, I don't know if I'd say all the positives, because there were some pretty big glaring problems in this game. I mean, the one good side was the offense finally looked like a somewhat of an NFL offense. I know it tapered off in the fourth quarter. They got royally screwed out of a touchdown. They got royally screwed out of a holding penalty on the kickoff return for the Vikings. Yes, those were problems in that game, but I don't know. To me, just real quick thoughts before we jump into the studs and duds that I wanted to get your thoughts on. This was the game that kind of signaled the same problem the team had last year. You're going with some high hopes thinking, you know, maybe they can turn some things around. The defense for the first time all year really gets exposed by some pretty solid talent and guys like Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. And TJ Hawkinson played well too. to me, this kind of has the same feel as last year's team. Like I said, the defense falters in this game after they've been so good this year. Maybe things start to trend downward as the schedule goes on. But I don't know if you had any really overall thoughts before we jumped into the studs and duds things or anything that stood out to you in this game.
I wish I didn't fall asleep for the fourth quarter, but I did.
I could not stay awake.
I tried so hard to do so, and I just couldn't.
You didn't miss much, though. Any good.
I battled all day. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't know. Just lost the battle.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do? But a 33-26 loss, unfortunately. Let's start with studs and duds.
Sure. I'll jump right into my studs as usual. My number three, Devontae Parker. Four receptions on four targets, 80 yards. Played 47 snaps, 85% of them. His best performance since week three in that Baltimore game, in my opinion, where he had five catches on 10 targets and 156 yards, of course, more yardage, but was more efficient in this game, catching all of his passes. All four of his catches, they went for 16, 14, 10, and 40. So a lot of your big plays came out of Devontae Parker in this game. 85%, obviously, a lot of the snaps. Would have liked to have seen him maybe used a little bit more, again, just those explosive play ability, and especially on that end zone corner, kind of corner fade to Bourne, where he dropped it. I would have liked that to have been Parker, obviously bigger body, see if he can go up and make a play. But Parker was good in this game all around, I thought.
Yeah, and especially in a game when you're, you know, dealing with Thielen and Jefferson, you want, you know, a little bit more than four catches,
mm-hmm.
Even though he had 80 yards out of your number one receiver. But
yep.
Yeah, Devontae Parker had a pretty good game. My number 2B stud, I'm doing a 2A, 2B,
okay.
Is Jonathan Jones. I think, you know, wasn't a great defensive game, but overall, outside of like a couple plays here and there that you're going to get to, I think overall he was pretty solid. Six tackles, one assisted tackle for seven combined.
Mm-hmm.
An interception with a return of 55 yards and three pass deflections. I thought he was just one of the few bright spots on defense and is worth including in the studs category.
Okay. We may differ.
It's not too often that we have one of us with the guys a dud and then the other is a stud.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, we may differ on opinions on Jonathan Jones coming up a little later, but we'll finish off with a good first before we get into the bad. I don't know. Maybe I'm nitpicking. I'm not. I don't know. We'll get to it in a second, like I said. My number two stud, Raekwon McMillan, for a guy that is more so a special teams guy than anything else. He got a little bit of an opportunity to play some linebacker in this game. I thought he played pretty well. Had only three tackles, but two tackles for losses. He stuffed Dalvin Cook on a two-yard run, a two-yard loss before the Jonathan Jones interception, and then stopped Dalvin Cook on a three-yard pass in the fourth quarter. Like I said, more of a special teams guy. He played 58% of the snaps there, but made the most, I thought, of his 23 snaps on defense. Again, you know, we've seen guys like Uche step up the last couple weeks. Maybe McMillan's a guy that kind of sneaks his way in here, gets some more playing time, and performs pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were giving Raekwon praise, and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up, and I'd say, you know, one of his more noteworthy performances this year.
Yep.
Kind of a guy that's like been like quietly good. Doesn't really like blow up the stat sheet, but quietly good.
Yeah, he's kind of there. Makes a couple of plays here and there. And you're like, oh, that guy still exists, I guess.
Yep. My 2A stud is Ramondre Stevenson because I couldn't decide who to put for 2 and 3 respectively. So I did a little committee. Mm-hmm. 7 carries, 36 yards, 9 catches for 76 yards. Just typical Ramondre Stevenson for me.
Steady Stevenson. Guy is great. You know, it stinks that he's your whole offense basically, but I mean, I'll take it. He's going to obviously have a huge increase in workload with no Damian Harris against the Bills coming up, but I think he's more than capable of filling in for that. We've seen him do that in the past, of course. Number one consensus, if you watch the game, if you didn't fall asleep like Mike did in the fourth quarter, Mac Jones is our number one, 28 for 39. This looked like vintage. Is maybe that's too strong of a word, but it looked like last year Mac Jones, 71%, almost 72% of his completion percentage, 382 yards. That was a season high, 2 touchdowns, no picks, 3 sacks on a quarterback rating of 119.8. The touchdown throw to Aguilar was a dime. The touchdown throw on the sideline to Devontae Parker was a dime. You know, not a perfect game for Mac Jones. He did taper off a little bit in that fourth quarter, but again, some of the play calling was not great. Protection, of course, broke down late. Did have a couple of mishaps on that 2-minute drive where he took the sack. Really can't do that there, but I'll give credit where credit's due. You know, obviously, if you listen to the show all year, I've been very high on the Mac Jones train when a lot of people were getting off of it. You know, give this guy time. You know, if he gets the protection he needs, he's going to be fine. If the offense figures some things out, he'll look good. And he did. You know, this was the first game I thought he looked truly like last year, Mac Jones. You know, it gives you hope moving forward that he can continue to do these things. Again, the big thing for me, no turnovers. I think that's 3 weeks in a row now he hasn't thrown a pick or hasn't lost the ball. So, you know, you're seeing that improvement from Jones that you've kind of waited on all season. It sucks that it's come now, what, 12 weeks into the year? But Mac Jones, I thought, has made some strides and looked good in this game.
Yeah, this is, you know, I've been in a different Mac Jones camp, but this is kind of the guy I've been waiting to see all year. Mm-hmm. In the last two games, he's routed back into form and, you know, oftentimes better than he played like for good chunks of last season. He was pretty consistently good last year.
Mm-hmm.
I had Mac Jones my number one stud too for those reasons. This is what I've been waiting for from Mac Jones. I was worried for a while, you know, these subpar performances that he was kind of plateauing or maybe even slumping a little bit, but was holding out hope for something like this, and he's delivering. So
that's all you could hope for at this point in the year. With some things looking bad, some good competition coming up, you hope he can continue to play well and maybe steal you a game here and there. On to the dud side of things, like you said, it might be the first time we differ on a certain player. Of course, that is Jonathan Jones. For me, I don't know if it's too early to say, you know, I thought so watching the game Thursday night. It's tough going up against a guy like Justin Jefferson, but I thought this was J.C. Jackson against Stephon Diggs all over again. Jonathan Jones had the majority of the coverage on Justin Jefferson, had his moments, did have the interception, like you said. He did drop an interception, so he could have had two, of course. But against Justin Jefferson, Jonathan Jones, Jefferson went 5 for 8 for 59 yards in that touchdown where Jones just kind of lost him in the double coverage. Also allowed completions to Adam Thielen for 3 yards and KJ Osborne for 8. I think that 8-yard completion was a first down. Like I said, dropped the second interception. 2 face mask penalties. That's what puts him on the duds list for me. You know, those are two penalties that can't happen. Like if he didn't have those, I probably would have had him in the studs or close to it or an honorable mention. But the 2 face masks are a killer. You know, obviously the game for the Patriots, they made stupid mistakes here and there. That was, of course, just 2 of them. So, like I said, I hope he can contain Stephon Diggs this week. We'll obviously get into the Bills game coming up. But to me, this showed little glimpses of, like I said, what you saw last year whenever J.C. Jackson had to go up against Stephon Diggs. Maybe you're seeing that with Jonathan Jones here. He feasts off of average competition and average receivers. But if he has to go up against an elite guy, he struggles. And again, maybe I'm being too harsh because Justin Jefferson is, you know, I think he's the best receiver in football. You could definitely make that case after the season he's put together. I don't know. I wasn't all that impressed with him in this game. I know, like you said, you thought differently.
Yeah, I honestly kind of, I don't know why. I've just kind of like put the,
you needed a stud. So you just kind of threw the 2 face mask penalties off to the side. And we're like, oh, we'll just forget about it.
I truly forgot about the face mask penalty that every year, even if the Patriots are playing a late game, it's just always like kind of a blur because I'm just really fighting.
Mm-hmm. You're just out of it at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I forgot.
I forgot he had 2, to be honest. Really, sorry to cut you off. I knew he had 1. I had to go back and look. I'm like, I'm pretty sure. I couldn't remember if it was him or Miles Bryant, but yeah, he had 2 in this game. So not great in that sense.
Yeah, fair. Very fair. Yep. So I had Matt Judon. And
how dare you?
That kind of stinks because he's been really good. But he was quiet in this game. 1 tackle, 2 assisted tackles, 3 combined on 87% of snaps. Kind of need more from him in a game like this.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. The only argument I could have against it is I think maybe this was the first time you saw an offense in the Vikings game plan. It looked like for Judon because, I mean, they took him out of this game, like you said, rightfully so. 87% of the snaps and really didn't do a whole lot. It's not like he wasn't obviously out there trying to do stuff. You know, he got to the quarterback a couple of times, I thought. Did have the offside penalty too, which wasn't great. But I think this was the first time you really saw a team kind of go after him and take him out and say, beat us with the other guys. And they didn't. You know, that's really, we've talked about this season. You know, guys have had their moments. Uche Wires was, I thought, non-existent in this game. Dwan Bentley did not have a good game at all. I thought I could maybe put him in the duds on my side because they kind of attacked him in coverage at times. So the linebacker core was not great as a whole. And like you said, if Judon gets shut down, which he did, your defense kind of gets exposed here and there.
Yeah, definitely true. But nothing really overwhelming to worry about for me here.
Exactly.
Number 2 dud.
You and I have the same one and two. I mean, again, obvious ones for obvious reasons. Number two, we'll start with, though, Pierre Strong, obviously a running back, but I have him in here as a special teams guy. For whatever reason, they put him out there on the special teams. I don't know if they had him go try to block that punt or he just went on his own. But if you're going to try to block that punt, the one thing you can't do is not run into the kicker. And that's exactly what Pierre Strong did. He got an earful from Bill Belichick on the sideline, rightfully so, because that's a killer. It kept Minnesota's drive alive, and Adam Thielen ends up with the ultimately game-winning touchdown. So Pierre Strong's not getting a lot of opportunities, obviously, to run the ball when you have guys like Stevenson and Harris. You have to kind of make a name for yourself others in other places. We've seen, obviously, plenty of guys do that on the special teams before, but this was a killer in this game.
It definitely was. I mean, there's really not much more to add. It's just not entirely, but, like, he's a huge reason you lost the game.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I mean. It's like it's one play. And again, I feel like we don't put a lot of guys on the duds list for, you know, one play. You know, they have to do something really wrong. But that's the case here. Like, you really screwed this up. Again, it big reason why you lost this game. One of, you know, many reasons. But that's one of the standout ones. The other guy for another dumb penalty. He's been on this list before. Miles Bryant is our number one consensus. Fell down on the Jalen Reagor 25-yard catch on 3rd and 7. Can't have that happen. And then later on that same drive had the just completely idiotic, unnecessary roughness penalty, hitting Adam Thielen from behind to set up the, at the time, 26-26 game time field goal. I said it Thursday night watching the game. I've had enough of Miles Bryant. I know they don't have a lot at the position other than, you know, depth-wise, you're going to put him out there. You know, he's fast. I get that. So maybe you can keep him with a speedy guy. He tried his hand at Justin Jefferson a couple times, got burnt. There's no use for this guy in this team. I think they put him out there to field a punt too at one point. He did nothing on that too. And I was like, what are you trying Miles Bryant on the punt return again for? So I just don't get what they see in him. He doesn't bring anything to the table for me. I feel like you feel the same way. I don't know what really the point of having Miles Bryant here is anymore. I can't imagine there are worse guys you could bring in than him.
I don't understand either, man.
All right. Fair enough. So there's studs and duds. Good analysis there. Just some takeaways or some thoughts, as I said. We kind of talked about it on the studs side of it. Mac Jones thought he was really good in this game. You had the protection, which was surprising. No David Andrews in this game. Again, you thought maybe the Vikings would have, you know, the similar game plan to what the Jets did. And the Patriots offensive line, for the most part, held their own. I know Kajust didn't have that great of a game, but James Ferentz filled in nicely. Mac Jones got protection and was good doing so. Mark Daniels had the tweet here over the last 3 weeks. Mac Jones has faced three good defenses. He's completed 74% of his passes, 71 for 96, for 775 yards to go with three touchdowns and no picks. That's progress. So like you said, just impressed with what Mac Jones has done. This is kind of the guy we've been waiting to see. And again, like I mentioned, it stinks that it came 11 weeks into the year, but like I said, I've been saying it all season. The guy gets protection. He's going to play well. Again, fourth quarter, things kind of faltered late, but again, I said in the stud side of things, thought Mac Jones played really well. I don't know if you had anything else that you wanted to add to that you already did.
Not really. Yeah, I think I summed it up in the studs category.
All right. So we talked about kind of the special teams mistakes, obviously the big F up by Pierre Strong. I don't know. I've seen some people argue that the Patriots maybe weren't ready to go in this game because you had the kickoff return by, is it Nwangwu? That's how you pronounce that name, Nwangwu. I'm pretty sure. But Nwangwu, something like that. Yeah, but I mean, just a ton of mistakes in this game, uncharacteristic Patriots mistakes, which is what you people usually say. But I feel like you're seeing this type of stuff more and more as the season goes on. You're seeing these dumb mistakes. Obviously, you had a ton of them in the Bears game. You have a ton of them in this game that cost you the game. You know, the screw up on the 2-minute drill, like I said, with, you know, Mac Jones taking the sack or tries to scramble and takes a sack rather. Hunter Henry can't get out of bounds on that 22-yard completion he had, so the Patriots have to burn a timeout. The ringers, I think it's Sheil Kapadia, had a good breakdown of all the Patriots' mishaps in this game. You have the kickoff return for a touchdown. You have the running into the kicker that leads to the game-winning touchdown. Three personal fouls on defense. Mac Jones botches the end of the first half drive, had to use a timeout, cost them two shots at the end zone. They had to settle for a field goal. You had the wasted down in the red zone since the play clock was winding down. I think they had to take a timeout there, just an overall sloppy performance. We've seen this a couple times this year where they have the mental lapses. You have these problems. It stinks because obviously you pretty much won a game 2 weeks ago on your special teams in that Jets game. Now you pretty much lose a game because of it. The penalties and the touchdown. Are you concerned at all with the way this team has been coached up at all recently, or just trying to make sense of these, you know, again, the Patriots that we've known in the past? You know, you don't make these mistakes. You wait for other teams to make them. Shit, you saw it in the Jets game. Now they're the ones doing it. Any concern moving forward, this is something that might linger. This not maybe not ready to play from the coaching standpoint, or just, you know, not being able to work things out as the game goes on?
No, I think they, I feel like they've got to know, like, that the schedule's ramping up and that, you know, this shit isn't going to fly. I know Minnesota's a good team, but, like, against teams like the Jets, who you played twice, the Colts, you maybe get away with things a little more. But, you know, when you're facing the Bills twice and the Bengals, these things aren't going to fly as much. So I'm not really, like, super worried about it.
Okay. All right, so then on the flip side of that, then, the next question I have, and that kind of wraps up the Minnesota game, is we'll do the NFL preview in a sec, or the recap in a second. But there was a pretty glaring stat that kind of just puts a complete damper on this game as well. This is from OptaStats or OptaStats on Twitter. Said, quote, teams that scored at least 25 points, gained at least 400 total yards, outgained their opponent, completed at least 70% of their passes, had fewer than 60 penalty yards, didn't commit any turnovers, and didn't miss a field goal, were a perfect 170-0 entering Thursday night. Of course, the Patriots are now the 170-1 on that list because they did all those things and still lost the game. Primetime Kirk Cousins, who, if people saw that TikTok, that was one of my keys to this game, is you make him show up, you make him make mistakes, because Kirk Cousins is not good past 1 o'clock. This game, he was damn near perfect, 30 for 37, 299 yards, 3 touchdowns, did have the pick. But he, of course, outplayed the Patriots in the second half. After the interception on that third drive of the game, the Vikings went field goal on 14 plays, touchdown on 9. The kickoff return, the field goal on 14 plays, touchdown on 6 plays, and then had 2 punts to end the game. So, you know, they were pretty economical when it came to their scoring drives. Minnesota's big three of Jefferson, Thielen, and Hawkinson carried the load. Jefferson had 9 catches for 139 in the touchdown. Thielen, 9, 61 in the touchdown. Hawkinson, 5, 43 in the touchdown. Patriots run defense was good in this game. You know, they stopped Dalvin Cook, they stopped Alexander Mattson. Cook went for 42, Mattson went for 11 yards. But again, we saw when the Patriots have to play a solid offense and a really good receiver, they tend to struggle. So like I said, to me, it seemed like the same thing that happened last year with last year's defense, is they started to falter when they played good competition. So seeing this again this year has me a little bit worried. Are you in the same camp, or are you kind of in the wait and see type of thing, if they can maybe bounce back this week against Buffalo?
Yeah, I'm not coming out of this game super worried. I don't really know why, and I don't know if that's a bad thing, but just vibes, man. Just okay. Vibes.
All right, fair enough.
Really all it is.
I'll take the positivity. That's good. Got to have some going against the Bills, because Lord knows, as we did in the predictions, it might be tough. I don't know if people can hear the rain coming through my microphone, but it's downpouring here. It's
super loud on my roof like 10 minutes ago. It was pretty wild.
Yeah, it is. It's downpouring here. Not great. Hopefully I don't lose power. That's really bad. Wow. But that's it for me in the Minnesota game. Jesus Christ, it's not good. I don't know if you want to start off with I'm going to try to move my microphone here and see if I can figure something out. If you want to start off with the week 12 recap, because there was a lot of interesting things happened this week, whether it was good clock management, games that came down to the wire, some piss poor management of timeouts in some certain games. So I'll let you take that away and kind of obviously start with the Thanksgiving stuff.
Yeah, Bills, Lions, the Bills, the 8-3 Bills now. Keep it close with the Lions. This game makes me feel better about picking the Chiefs in my midseason predictions to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, because the more and more I watch the Bills, the more and more I do not have faith in them beating the Chiefs.
They're not the Jets, for obvious reasons, but they make Jets mistakes, I've noticed. Like, they do stupid things in games. Yeah,
Josh Allen's one of the most purely talented QBs in the league, and he has the most picks at the same time.
It's ridiculous. He has, like, I don't know what it is, just wet brain or whatever the case is, but he is, like, from a Jets standpoint, we fit right in on that team, because he makes some really dumb mistakes when it comes to throws and turnovers. I don't know if that's him maybe trying to play hero ball here and there, but I'm still picking, spoiler alert, still picking the Bills to win this game this week, but I don't know. Maybe the Lions expose them a little bit here. You know, it takes them to the final 20 seconds to beat Detroit. Like, maybe it's a game the Bills went into thinking, you know, we're better than the Lions, we're just going to overlook them. And Detroit came out and stunned them. But I'm with you. I don't know how you can have faith in the Bills moving forward against a team like the Chiefs, who just week after week, as we'll get to that game later, continue to just be the most complete team in football, I think. I know the Eagles might have something to say about that, but it's Kansas City right now for me. They're just too dominant on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. I agree. But solid game. Honestly, Thanksgiving games are close.
They were more entertaining than maybe you thought they'd be on paper, at least to start the season. Especially when we saw Bills Lions, like, that'll be a 40-0 blowout by the Bills. Dallas won't, you know, the Giants won't even compete with Dallas. That was a close game, as we'll get to now. Like, so they were decent games, kind of surprising.
Yep. Yeah, like you said, Cowboys and Giants. This game was okay. The thing that bothered me the most about this game was the Cowboys jerseys. Like,
they are ugly jerseys.
I don't love the Cowboys regular jerseys, but like, it's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
So like, why not just stick with it? But
beats me. It's a good question. My dad's the same thing. He's like, man, these jerseys are ugly watching the game. I'm like, yep, you are 100% right.
Like, if you have, as you have in the outline, like, if you shut down Saquon, even though he got in the end zone, you can shut down the Giants, because Darius Slayton stepped up in the last 3 or 4 weeks, but they just don't have enough, and they've got to be praying for OBJ.
You said it earlier. Whoever would, he's going to sign with one of these two teams. I would lean more towards the Cowboys, but that was kind of the big thing for me. But takeaways from both these Thanksgiving games is the Lions kind of exposed Buffalo here and there with some shortcomings, and the Cowboys definitely exposed the Giants. Like, the Giants, I have to go back and look at their schedule to see the teams, like the level of competition they've beaten. But you're right. Like, you shut down, we've seen it a couple times the last couple weeks. You shut down Saquon, you force Daniel Jones to beat you. He's had a good season, but in crunch time, I'm not picking Daniel Jones to go against really any teams, because, again, Saquon's their whole offense. Slayton, as you mentioned, has been great, but he got shut down in this game too. He only had a couple of catches. So their offense revolves around their run game. If that's not going to go, then the Giants are a pretty vulnerable team.
Yeah. Both of these teams, I feel like, can be exposed on any week, but the Cowboys have bunned things up pretty good for the most part this season.
That's what I want to ask you then, too. I'm glad you brought that up. Is like, we're still kind of waiting, because you and I are both in agreement. Like, the Cowboys are going to find a way to Cowboys something up here, you know, turn back into the team they've been the last couple of years. What is really their weakness right now? Their run game's excellent. Their receivers are phenomenal. Their defense is great. You know, Micah Parsons is probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Or be pretty close to it. Like, Dak, is Dak and the mistakes
Mike he McCarthy. Had?
That's a great one. I don't know why I overlooked Mike McCarthy. That's exactly what the answer is. But I was going to say, Dak has threw a couple of bad picks in this game, but
I don't trust Dak at all.
That's what I mean. I don't trust Dak in a big game. Yeah. I like Dak Prescott, but I don't trust him in a big game either. But you're right. The answer is 100% Mike McCarthy doing something stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you can set your watch to Mike McCarthy fucking up in a big way. Panthers and Broncos. We are skipping over the Patriots game, of course, because we talked about it earlier.
Yep.
Sam Darnold with a pretty Sam Darnold stat line, missing a pick or two. Mm-hmm. 11-19, 164 and a touchdown. Deontay Foreman literally goes in and out. He has a bad week and an awesome week, a bad week and an awesome week. I know, because I have him on my dynasty team.
I'm in fantasy as well. I did not play him.
Pretty wild
this game
for a guy that was like, couldn't stick around with the Houston Texans like a year or two ago, and now he's like actually pretty solid.
Yeah.
So good for him. But it's another one of those games, as I say all the time, and as you have noted in the outline again, the Broncos suck everybody down to their level.
Yep. They're a bad football. I don't know how Nathaniel Hackett sees he's going to see the end of the season, but sees next year. Like, they have to get rid of him. And there's already problems with this team, like I have in the outline. You have Mike Purcell yelling at Russ on the sideline. There's rumors that he's lost that team. And I saw some people come out today and say that isn't true, but we've talked about it before. If you're a player, especially on the defense,
to his birthday party, bro.
That's right. But I don't know how you can get up like this guy. Imagine him giving you like a pregame speech, trying to pump you up. It's got to be the corniest, cheesiest, like dumbest thing on the planet. And I'm kind of glad someone finally got in his face and was like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, we can't play for you anymore. We can't play with you. You're kind of a loser.
Dude, I know for a fact I would fucking hate that guy.
Like, it's got to be one of the most annoying experiences in football. Like, just it's unbelievable. Like you said, though, I'm glad Dante Foreman showed up against somebody other than the Falcons. That gives me hope. Maybe I could start him in fantasy down the line, because he played well in this game, like you said. And Sam Darnold, the touchdown he had was just typical Sam Darnold. I think we fumbled the ball, but then he fire drilled it into the end zone, kind of rolling in. Like, that's just typical Sam Darnold stuff, but
yeah.
Panthers got a gritty win against a really, really bad team, and there's no hope for that Broncos team. They're so bad.
It's like the worst trade ever.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Bucks and Browns, this one almost ended in a tie, which would have been crazy. Like,
yep.
Could never picture Tom Brady tying the Cleveland effing Browns.
I know, right? That's just gross to say.
I'm just wondering who's going to one-up David Njoku next week, because we had the Justin Jefferson catch. Now we have the Njoku catch.
That's right, yep.
And now we're going to have something even crazier in week 13 at this rate. Tom Brady lost to the Bucks and lost to the Browns.
Yep.
And that's pretty crazy to come out of my mouth. I can't believe that. Todd Bowles is a pussy.
Well, I was going to say, I'm like, you can blame the head coach for that one. I don't know why you're playing for overtime with Tom Brady as your quarterback. Like, everyone watching that game sitting on the couch after freaking out about the Njoku catch because it was awesome, you're sitting there going, holy crap, Tom Brady has 30 seconds and all three timeouts. Like, this game's all he needs was what? 60 plus yards, 70 yards, depending on where they got the ball. It's like, this game's over. He's going to get them in the field goal range. They couldn't stop Chris Godwin, so it's like, all right, just feed him the entire drive and you'll be good to go. They almost did. And then, like you said, Todd Bowles pussies out because he doesn't want to use any timeouts and I saw some people say maybe he was afraid Brady was going to throw a pick. I think he's thrown like two picks all season.
Dude, so it's like Todd Bowles played this like it was an NHL game and you get a point for going to overtime.
Yeah, yep. You get half a win for, it's like, it's unbelievable. And then the play calling too in overtime, like just not, I don't know. It was a weird decision. I hate saying it, but like the Bucks deserve to lose the way they handled the end of that game. It sucks for Brady. Like now you got to assume he's pissed off again, but it's good win for the Browns. I mean, it stinks for Jacoby Brissett. Now he has to take a backseat because he was pretty solid filling in for Deshaun Watson. They get him back now, so then maybe the Browns string together some wins here and there. Nick Chubb obviously was still Nick Chubb in this game. 26 rushes, 116 yards, had the game-winning touchdown. Helped me complete a 60. I think at that point it would have been a 60-point comeback in fantasy. So thank you to him, Miles Sanders, and Najee Harris. But yeah, just like you said, a wild game to say that the Cleveland Browns beat Tom Brady.
Yeah, it is. It certainly is. Jaguars, Ravens, 28-27. Jaguars, the Ravens cannot hold a lead.
They're frauds. Yep, they are. The new Falcons, they are frauds. Like, crazy to think that Justin Tucker is actually human. You know, it is wild to say that he missed the 67-yard field goal, but with Justin Tucker, if I were to tell you he hit that, you would have been like, yeah, it's Justin Tucker. Who cares? That's the crazy thing is how close he actually came to hitting it. Are you ready to walk back your claims on Trevor Lawrence, or are you still?
No.
Still? Really? After this game, what he did in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, let me see it consistently. Every time he has a good game, then he just has shit games.
That's fair. Good point. All right, I'll give you that. But, I mean, he was excellent in this game, especially, like I said, late in the game. Zay Jones steps up, but I think the bigger story is, like you said, Baltimore can't hold a lead. 19-10 going into the fourth quarter. You should be able to win that game, and they just can't figure it out. I don't know what it is.
The crazy thing is Tucker would have broken his own NFL record because I just looked it up.
His not surprising.
Record was 66 yards. He hit once, and that would have been 67. So that would have been pretty wild, just showing how good he is.
Absolutely.
Next up, Dolphins and Texans. Davis Mills benched. Kyle Allen back. I did not even know he was on the Texans.
I didn't either, yep.
I kind of forgot he existed. He was okay. He threw that one bonehead pick at the end. I didn't see the first one. Mm-hmm. Which is just classic for a QB like him. You kind of expect a pick like that every game. But as you also have noted here, the defense from Miami stepped up massively. They were up, weren't they up 30 to nothing?
They're up 30 to nothing, and they pulled all their starters. And then the Texans went, I think the Texans defense might have forced
Tua got hurt.
Did he?
Tua got hurt in this game, didn't he?
I don't think so. At least I didn't see anything about that.
Was Skylar Thompson in this game?
Yeah, because they pulled all the starters in the third quarter. They're like, all right, it's 30 to nothing at halftime. No, they were like, it's 30 to nothing at halftime. We're going to.
He does have an ankle injury.
Oh, that's not good.
I just looked it up. He's full participant today, but something to monitor.
But yeah, I mean, I think they were up 30 to nothing at halftime. They pulled the starters maybe halfway through the third quarter. And I think the Texans defense proceeded to have Miami get like four straight three. And now Skylar Thompson fumbled the ball twice, I think, or threw a pick and fumbled the ball. But Texans at least made it interesting, I guess. You know, they didn't get blown out by 30, only half of that. But like you said, Miami's defense was phenomenal, and they are and continue to be a very scary team.
Yeah, they certainly do. But yeah, I mean, they let the Texans get back in and still won, so good for them, I guess. Trevor Siemian versus Mike White. 31, Jets 31, Bears 10. Mike White is good.
The Jets are now much scarier than they are or were with Zach Wilson. They should have made this change weeks in advance. They probably would have beat the Patriots. Yeah, there you go. That's, yep.
Great. Every single QB that steps up and plays good in relief, it's just going to be, you're on the Colts.
Yep. I would not surprise me. Stamp that right now. Yep.
Fucking who else? I don't know. Taylor Heineke, maybe.
Oh, they had Jacoby Brissett and they let him walk. Yeah. So that's a dumb decision there, but. But yeah, I mean, do you take the Jets seriously with Mike White, or are they still the Jets for you? All right, fair enough.
I will not take the Jets seriously.
I'll give him credit for making the right decision and benching Zach Wilson, because he sucks, and Mike White balled out. Like, I know it was the Bears without why can't I think of their quarterback's name, without Fields. Thank you. But and the game, like, was shitty conditions too. It was downpouring, so maybe a little difficult there. But Mike White played well, and I think the Jets might have something there. And I would continue to play him until he loses you a game, which I don't think he's going to. More so than Zach Wilson will lose you a game.
Yeah, Zach Wilson will lose your games. Nope. Bengals 20, Titans 16. Joe Mixon out, Ja'Marr Chase still out. He'll be back against the Chiefs this week, though. It's kind of like, not quite like the Giants, but.
I was just going to say that. Yep. You took the words right out of my mouth.
You neutralized the team a little bit.
Yep. The Titans are the Giants of the AFC. You take out Derrick Henry, it's over. You force Ryan Tannehill to beat you. I have more faith in Ryan. Actually, I don't know. Would you have more faith in Ryan Tannehill beating you or Daniel Jones?
Daniel Jones.
Would you?
Tannehill sucks.
Tannehill does suck. You're right. I'm just trying to think of the supporting cast outside of Derrick Henry, outside of Saquon Barkley. You're right. It's probably the Giants, because Daniel Jones can do more with his legs than Ryan Tannehill can. Treylon Burks is good. But yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. But Joe Mixon and the Bengals do enough to get it done. Up next, we have Commanders and Falcons, 19-13 in favor of the Commanders. Brian Johnson just runs like a maniac.
Robinson?
What did I say? Johnson?
Yes.
Jeez. Thinking of the Red Sox unintentionally.
Oh, Deron God. Payne. Erase Deron that Payne. Name from my mind.
Yeah.
That guy sucked.
As you have noted, Deron Payne makes the play of the day. This is just like kind of what you'd expect from a Commanders and Falcons game.
So. It was a weird game. You know, I caught some of it on Red Zone. I love that Brian Robinson only plays well when I bench him in fantasy. My buddy has the same problem in two separate leagues. But you know, a great game for him. Again, obviously the story of him, to see him break out like he did in this game and finally, you know, put it all together, it seemed like, because they used him a lot in this game. Good for him there. But story of the day, again, Commanders defense, Mariota throws the ball. Well, not really threw it away, but Commanders stepped up and made a play when they needed to.
Yeah. I have to imagine we see Desmond Ridder in the next couple weeks, probably.
You would think so, yeah. I mean, the Falcons
are some sort of showcase for him.
So. Yeah, they aren't playing. I mean, obviously, to begin with, weren't playing for anything, even though I think they're still technically in the hunt. But I did see today they just Pitts had season-ending surgery, didn't he? So you're not getting him back anytime soon. So, I'd roll out any young. Yep, I'd roll out any young guys you have. See what you have in them.
Yep, I agree. Cardinals 25. Our Chargers 25, Cardinals 24. This was the steroid boy game. it wasn't. Last week was. My mistake.
It's okay.
But yeah, steroid boy played good. 4 catches for 87 yards and a touchdown. James Conner was very good. I didn't really catch much of this game. So I was about to add something, but I don't really have a lot on this one.
I didn't either. All I know is that it was one of the many games that the head coach decided to go for 2 at the end of the game, and it worked out. Typical Brandon Staley, though, going for 2 at the end of the game, down 1. You know, going. I mean, give him credit, I guess, going for the win instead of trying to force overtime, and obviously go for the tying point after attempt and go for overtime and play there. But this was a game, like, if this goes wrong for Brandon Staley, I absolutely think he probably should have gotten fired. I've said that before. Like, that's kind of where I'm at right now. Especially again, for fantasy football standpoint, when you see the game start off with Austin Eckler have like a 7-yard run or catch or whatever it was. And then he's benched for 2 or 3 straight plays. And they go, the offense does nothing. But again, I just have no faith in Brandon Staley when it comes to this Chargers team. They're a weird team. You know, they have a game like this where they, you know, fight and they win it. It wouldn't surprise me if they lose next week to whoever they play, because there's just such a weird team. I didn't have any outline. I forgot Marquise Brown came back, played in this game. I think he had 4 catches for maybe 60 yards, if I remember correctly. So good to see him get back out there and play well with DeAndre Hopkins as well, because I know that was a question for me. You know, how will those two guys coincide together when they look pretty good?
Yeah. Not much to add for me. Like I said, didn't catch much of that game. Just caught some highlights on Red Zone here and there.
Yep.
Raiders and Seahawks. The Raiders get a gutsy, high-scoring win.
Fuck yeah, they did.
Josh Jacobs maybe has the best individual performance of the season.
I think so. You can make the case just from the touchdown number for Mixon a couple weeks back, but
Oh, yeah, I freaking forgot.
Well, I was going to say you could do that, but Jacobs outrushed him and just from a total yard standpoint had, what, 300 and – what is that, 9 – I know.
303.
Yeah, thank you. I suck at math. Yeah, probably out-yardaged him total yardage-wise. He was phenomenal in this game, and again, you know, I don't want to say he's their whole offense because they do have Devontae Adams there, but when he goes, it seems like that team goes, and a phenomenal performance from him.
Yeah, this just bought Josh McDaniels some time. You know, I know they're saying like, oh, we're not going to fire him, but like
they can't. They're broke, which is wild.
Win will help you. Mm-hmm. Chiefs 26, Rams 10. The Rams season just continues to get worse, and unfortunately for them, they will not have a high draft pick to show for it.
I was thinking
to the Lions.
Thinking that watching the game, I'm like, how would you feel to be a Rams fan right now? You don't have any of your star players. So you sit there and you go, okay, well, I guess we'll just tank the rest of the year and maybe get a good draft pick. And then you go, oh shit, wait a second. We don't have literally any draft picks. So that's a team. I know they just won the Super Bowl, so maybe it's not all you know, bad out in LA, but future wise, you got to think like, all right, maybe this, again, guys are hurt, so maybe there's not too many problems. I don't know. I feel like it'd be a weird spot to be a Rams fan right now, because you're kind of hoping for the future, but then you don't really know what is coming down the line because of all these questions you have.
Exactamundo. Pretty shite. Mm-hmm. Pretty shite.
And your big name receiver, sorry, that you paid a bunch of money for in the offseason too. I forgot Allen Robinson's done for the year too with a foot injury. Yeah. So that you don't have that to look forward to either. So it's not a great time right now for Rams fans.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are pretty shite, the New Orleans Saints are so bad.
They're a joke of a football team. I don't know if you know, is Jameis Winston hurt still? Like, why is he not playing?
They want to go with Andy Dalton.
You might be the first person to ever say that.
I know, but
it's just to hear it, be like, I'm choosing Andy Dalton is not something that, whether it's you believe it or someone else believes it, I'm going with Andy Dalton should never be the thought process of anybody. Like, in this day and age. Absolutely. It. Yeah, absolutely. But it's unbelievable.
About this game.
Fair. That's fine. I didn't watch any of it because I couldn't care less, to be honest. You see that game on the schedule. The only surprising thing about it is that the 49ers only were able to score 13 points. Like,
exactly.
I saw this on the schedule and went, this will be a 30-3 blowout. And
poop fart game.
Yep, absolutely. Good on the San Francisco defense. They're dominant. That's about it.
Yeah. A game that wasn't a poop fart game was the Eagles and Packers. Eagles went 40-23 on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Jordan Love looked good in the short sample size we saw from him. Aaron Rodgers seemingly thought he had a punctured lung. I don't know how you could think you have a punctured lung.
Oh, because it's Aaron Rodgers. That's why. It's Aaron Rodgers. Like,
idiot.
Like, I got to just drum this up more than it probably is. I got to make it seem like I'm sort of hero out here playing for this. The fact that he's playing against the Bears this week too, like, asshole. Just let Jordan Love play and see what you have in him. If I'm the Packers, that's what I'd be doing. Like, Aaron, sit down, shut up. Go do some of your mushrooms or whatever the hell you're doing. And try to get better, because clearly if anybody watched that game, he is not right in the slightest injury-wise. You said it. Jordan Love looked half decent in this game. You got to see what you have in him at some point. Like, you spent a first-round pick on the guy. The Packers really aren't, though.
That's the thing, because they have Rodgers locked up.
I guess, but, like, I mean, I don't know. They would never trade Aaron Rodgers. Or maybe do that then. Play Jordan Love so maybe you can trade him and get something for him. Again, maybe he's the next quarterback of the Colts, because they love their mediocre average quarterbacks to fill in year after year. But the Packers aren't playing for anything. Aaron, sit down, shut up. Let us play the kid that we drafted and see what we have in him. Maybe we can trade him. Maybe we can trade him and get some draft picks and get you some help or a wide receiver or something.
Yeah.
How's that? Like, the fact that he's playing this week against the Bears, it's just Aaron Rodgers to play and try to shove it to Bears fans more. That's what I mean. So. Yeah.
It's if you had to guess how to spell ayahuasca, how would you do it? You will not be able to guess it unless you've seen it spelling yourself.
I-O. Tell me when I fuck up. I-O.
It's fucked up on the first letter.
Come on, really?
A-Y-A-H-U-A-S-C-A. What a stupid word.
Close. Yeah, that's bad.
What a dumb word.
Wow.
Being of things that are dumb, Steelers and Colts ever playing. Mm-hmm. I hated this game. I hated.
Didn't watch any of it. Stopped watching as soon as Najee scored me by 6 points, and I was like, "Thank you, I'm out."
This game sucked. I don't even want to talk about it. 24-17 Steelers. Fart game.
Well, the only thing I was going to say about this game is I think you finally realize that Jeff Saturday is not an NFL caliber head coach because he fucked up with timeouts too. Like, what NFL head coach waits till the final 30 seconds to start using his three timeouts when you're down 7 points? Like, you're a moron. You're not an NFL head coach. Go be a coordinator somewhere or, you know, do something else. Go back to TV because this is not the position for you.
Brutal, dude. Just,
you know,
Patriots Bills, let's go to that, shall we?
I guess. I mean, this is another game that I'm not high on, so
no,
you got to think, everybody I've listened to just to sports talk today in the last couple of days, everyone's kind of said the same thing. It's like you have to hope the Patriots, and you have to think Bill Belichick has something drawn up so you don't get blown off the field again. Like I said, maybe the Lions showed you something, how to beat this Buffalo team, or at least keep it close. I just don't see how the Patriots, I know the offense played well against Minnesota and it was a big step up from what it's been this season. I just don't see how you stay with this Buffalo team. It's basically the same offense. They're, you know, the same weapons. You'll get into that in a second. Their defense has taken a hit with no Von Miller being, you know, out now with an injury. I still gave it to the Bills. They're still a more complete team. They still have way more weapons than you do. There's still the Stephon Diggs factor. And I don't think you have anyone who can cover him. I just don't see how the Patriots keep this a game and keep this close against Buffalo.
No, I don't either. But the interesting thing for Josh Allen and the Bills is no Deion Dawkins. So he loses a starter.
True.
Up front, the left tackle. So, you know, going into the season, I was expecting a blowout in this type of game. But with how things have been going for the Bills lately, I'm expecting a close game. So,
okay. You have more faith than I do.
Much different outlook than I would have expected. We know the drill with the Bills at this point. Very heavily involving Stephon Diggs. He's already over 1,000 yards in the year. Gabe Davis is continuing to get better. Isaiah McKenzie is, you know, taking last season as a jump-off point. And Dawson Knox will chip in. The running game is subpar. You know, they kind of like chip in every once in a while. They're nothing close to a sure thing.
Their run game is Josh Allen. Like,
yeah,
that's what it is.
That's true. They got Tre'Davious White back, which is unfortunate timing.
Mm-hmm.
They got him back last week. But Tremaine Edmonds, Teron Johnson, Matt Milano, Dane Jackson's been good. He's kind of breaking out this year, and Jordan Poyer is always very solid. Kerry Elam's having a solid rookie year. Christian Benford is hurt, so like you get Tre'Davious White back, then Christian Benford's on IR for the next 4 years minimum, so the hits keep coming. They just can't have a fully healthy secondary in Buffalo, I guess. It's been tough for them to get that group healthy. Ed Oliver is a disruptor in the middle of the D-line, but the Von Miller is huge. But like I said, man, I mean, I'm not in the mindset I expected to be in the beginning of the season where like, oh, this is just going to be a wash. The Bills are going to smack the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be close. It's going to be close. I think the Bills have kind of like established who they are.
Okay. So then I'm changing up this week instead of just doing things to look forward to or look out for. I thought we'd do just some standouts, some keys to the game that we have. So in that case, because you are more optimistic than I am, what are your keys, if you have any, to... You already said, I'm pretty sure you said you think the Bills are still going to win this game, but they're going to keep it close. What are the keys of the Patriots to keep this close? And if maybe they get lucky to beating the Bills, if you think there's even a possibility for that, what's going to have to happen?
Yeah, I think this needs to be a huge Ramondre Stevenson game, especially, you know, even if Harris were healthy,
mm-hmm.
Which he's not. It has to be a huge Ramondre Stevenson game. He's the heartbeat of the offense this year. I think this is a game where you have to be very conscious of clock management because that can give you a huge advantage in a, you know, it's probably going to be a close game against a team that's, you know, clearly better than you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are two huge things, and just protect Mac Jones. You know, you're missing Isaiah Wynn, but looks like David Andrews is going to play. Hopefully the line can hold up. Hopefully, you know, whoever's rotating in and out at left or right tackle can hold up because it's been kind of rough there. But for the love of God, I just hope things work out because I wonder who's the guy they drafted a few years ago that they brought back in from the Giants. It's Connor something.
Who, the Patriots? Was it a lineman you're talking?
Connor something. Maybe he'll start a right tackle. I don't know. But
I don't know if
Connor.
I don't know if the Bills are the team you bring a guy in for his first game. That might be a little iffy.
Yeah, it was Connor McDermott. They drafted him in the sixth round in 2017. He's back in the mix on the practice squad. I wonder if he gets elevated to give you another option besides Kajust.
Just some depth, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Those are my keys.
All right.
And, of course, you know, the obvious one. Try, for the love of God, to limit Stephon Diggs, but I don't have a lot of faith in that. So
I don't either. Well, that's my number one, same as yours. It's got to be feed Ramondre Stevenson. If there's one thing the Bills struggle with on defense this year, it's defending running backs out of the backfield who can catch the ball. Stevenson obviously fits that bill tremendously. And it's really just going to be Ramondre Stevenson. Like you said, there's no Damian Harris. I'm pretty sure he's already been ruled out for this game for the injury report. We've seen it already this season. When he doesn't play, the Patriots, it's like 99% Stevenson. They don't really use Pierre Strong. The way he played last week, he's probably going to be benched for this game, in all honesty. Like, I don't know how you have any faith in putting him in any situation after such a major F-up last week. Harris, Kevin Harris, he really seen nothing of. I don't know if against the Bills is the game to give him a chance really to go out there and see what he can do. So you're going to see a lot of Stevenson, and that makes a lot of sense. But like I said, the Bills, they struggle on defense with pass catching running backs. What is your point?
We have an OBJ update that actually includes the Bills. OBJ's free agent tour kicks off Thursday with a visit to the Giants, Friday to the Bills, and Dallas on Monday.
If you were to pick those or rank those three teams out of likeliness that he's going to sign, what are your three?
Bills, where Cowboys, do you put Giants.
Okay. I just think Jerry Jones is going to go like balls to the wall, you know, drop his pants for OBJ, throw whatever money he wants out there at him because he's just that type of guy. I'd put Cowboys, Bills. I don't understand the people that think he's going to go back to the Giants. Like, maybe just because it would be funny, but it's just because he's going to be the number one guy there again. Like, I'd rather go be the two behind Diggs and Lamb, I think, and have a legitimate shot at a Super Bowl than just be a playoff hopeful in the Giants and kind of just see what happens there. But who knows? Maybe he goes to the Giants, and like you said, it'd be a funny thing to see. Speaking of Stephon Diggs, though, I like you as well. Just find a way to stop Stephon Diggs. Obviously, we saw it in years past. He's on the Patriots, especially with J.C. Jackson on him. Like I said earlier, you just saw Justin Jefferson torch Jonathan Jones. You know, do you have faith in Jonathan Jones being able to stop Stephon Diggs? I don't know if I do. Those three games last year, including the playoffs for Diggs, he went for 14 catches on 24 targets, 196 yards and a touchdown. Career against the Patriots, five games, 31 catches, 422 yards and four TDs. Always seems to step up his game against the Patriots. You have to find a way to limit him and make somebody else beat you. You know, Gabe Davis, McKenzie, maybe Dawson Knox, like make somebody else beat you instead of Stephon Diggs.
McKenzie do what he did to you last year.
That too, exactly. You can let, you know, not have Stephon Diggs have a big game, but don't let McKenzie run all over you too, because that was just embarrassing at that point. And then number three for me, it's again an obvious one. What's your answer for Josh Allen? Again, last year in the three matchups, including the playoffs, he beat the crap out of the Patriots. Three games, 767 yards passing, nine touchdowns, no picks. You got to figure out a way to get him, you know, to make a mistake or two. Two sacks, 24 rushes, 169 yards. You know, it's tough to say keep him in the pocket and make him beat you with his arm because he's got such a great arm. But you saw in the playoff game last year, when he starts scrambling and can make plays happen and keep plays alive, that's when he really hurts you. So it's crazy to say, but I think your best option is to keep Josh Allen in the pocket here. You know, make him beat you with his arm. Maybe that elbow injury flares up again and he throws a couple of bad picks. But if he gets out and starts running around and keeps plays alive, you are screwed.
Yeah. Nope. Agreed on all fronts, good buddy.
All right, thank you.
Predictions, I'm going 24-19 Bills.
You're keeping it close. I'm not. I'm going 30-20 Bills. I just, again, if the Patriots have to get into a shootout, I don't think they can keep up with Buffalo. I'm with you. I like your idea of, you know, being able to manage the clock. And maybe that's a way you steal this one. You know, you just keep feeding Stevenson, make this a ground and pound game. But I don't know. The Bills offense is too elite. They're going to, you know, I don't want to say run up the score, but they're going to have stuff ready to go. You hope the Patriots have had time to figure this game out and try to do something productive against the Bills. But after the mistakes you saw last week against Minnesota, like if those start creeping up again, the Bills are just flat out able to run you out of the building. So I don't have a lot of faith. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully you're wrong as well. But I just don't know if the Patriots have enough to beat this team.
Me neither, but we'll see. I mean, teams have kept it close. The Jets beat them, so maybe the Patriots can do the same.
Yep.
On to Bruins, and I will start with the interesting note you have at the bottom of the Bruins section.
Okay.
Because I think there's a lot more to this than what is being presented.
A lot more good or bad, or like possibility of happening, or okay.
Fair enough. Patrick Kane to Boston was talked about on Monday with Spit and Chicklets on their latest episode. Look, it's going to be really complicated for any team that is strapped to the cap to bring in Patrick Kane this year. Because he makes $10 million. He chooses his destiny. So I imagine if the Bruins keep this up, he'd, you know, be willing to go to Boston. But getting rid of Riley and Smith is going to be tough because the Bruins aren't in a point of leverage. You know, they're going to have to attach a pick or, you know, really just get nothing for Riley or Smith. It's not as simple as they say is retaining half the salary and boom, Kane is a Bruin.
Mm-hmm.
There's most likely going to have to be a three-team deal and double retention for any team that gets him because he makes $10 million freaking dollars.
Yeah.
Well,
that's why when Ryan Whitney was like, oh, it's easy.
Riley and Smith, that does help, but you probably still need double retention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when he said, like you said, that you do, all you do is that and then boom, it's easy. It's like, I don't know about that. It's shit doesn't tend to just work out like that for you in life. Like I like his idea. I would love getting rid of Craig Smith. I wouldn't love getting rid of Riley because, again, the defensive depth is there. But, like, he's a guy you can get rid of. You're not going to lose sleep over it, and it makes sense money-wise. But I'm with you. When I saw this, I'm like, there's no way you're going to get teams to take those guys on without giving something up of value to go along with them. And what are the odds Chicago's going to retain half his salary?
They will.
Oh, okay, if they will.
If they want to get rid of him and he wants to go, they will.
All right, fair enough. So there's that problem solved, but
it's an expiring contract. Like
that's true. Yeah, they're not going to get anything. So,
and retaining salary only, you know, you have to. In this case, nobody's going to take on a $10 million player, but
that's
true.
Yep.
The trade value. So
okay,
I do think it's possible, but like
that was going to be my question: how realistic and how many hoops do you have to jump through to get this done, and is it worth it?
Yeah, then if you get Kane, you're creating a logjam on the wing. So you have to wonder if Jake DeBrusk would go the other way. I don't know if that's the play.
Mm-hmm.
I think you keep the younger asset at this point because I don't think after this year the Bruins are going to be signing Patrick Kane long term. But this would be all the chips on the table.
Yep.
Perfect, like scoring and experiential fit. He's won 3 Stanley Cups, but it's going to be tough if they explore this possibility, but it's not a realistic possibility right now. I'm not saying they were saying that, but it is something to monitor down the road because the Bruins really do want to go for it. Patrick Kane is the guy to get. So
all right.
I'd say, you know, in a year that Krejci or Bergeron didn't come back, they could go get Jonathan Toews for the same reasons. And
that's true. Yep.
The double retention. Cause they both make $10 million, but yeah, we'll see. Right. But that would be certainly be something. There's
absolutely
definitely legs to it a little bit, but it's more complicated than one might think.
Okay.
Bruins and Lightning on the road this time on the 21st, 5-3 win, 17-2 on the year at this point. Olmark, typical Olmark. I love that Krejci just let the slap shot rip on
that. Let it rip. Yep. Just threw off
Vasilevsky.
Mm-hmm.
Which was funny. Bergeron gets his 1,000th point in this one. Like Marchand, I think, didn't realize it at first. Then he started freaking out. He's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
The whole team comes to the ice. They start like hopping up and down. I love when they like start bouncing. It's just like, it's like you'd imagine like kids to do. They're just like bouncing around. Like it just looks funny. Pasternak had the stare down with the Lightning fan after he scored.
Yeah. The really guy funny. Flipping him off. Yep.
Yeah. That was a really funny celebration. Ouch. Really a little soreness in my throat all of a sudden.
It's not good.
But yeah, good win for the Bruins on the road. They stayed in Florida and lost to the Panthers after that. A rare L for the Bruins this year. Swayman made 26 saves on 30 shots. I mean, they were just due for a stinker.
Yeah, it was good. I don't want to say you could kind of see it coming because, I mean, they hadn't given any indication that they were falling off, but like 17-2 at that point, right around, again, everyone says the barometer is U.S. Thanksgiving. Like, the fact that they were potentially going to be 18-2 going into Thanksgiving, it's like, that's a pipe dream. Like, like you said, you're due for one kind of crappy performance, and it stinks that it came to a pretty good team in Florida, but it was, you know, you can live with it, especially with how they bounce back and how they continue to play. Like,
Yeah, it was tough too because like the only time the Bruins were able to score was when they had 5-on-3s. Mm-hmm. So this was a real stinker. Like it took that for them to score.
Yeah.
But McAvoy and Pasta got them on the board, both with some hurts. It's just a hammer fest. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Now we get hammers from McAvoy and Pasta. I love a good point hammer. But yeah, actually, it was a tough game. You know, it happens. But Panthers reverse retros look pretty sick.
Oh, those were nasty. Yep.
Yeah, so nice. Carolina, this is just one of those games. The Bruins play on Black Friday every year, and they don't lose. I feel like they never lose on Black Friday.
Their Black Friday games are always awesomely, like, super entertaining games. Come down to the wire, I feel like. Like, you don't ever want to, like, turn away. Yep.
It's the greatest. They were never out of this game completely. Like, Carolina controlled pace pretty well at points in this game, but the Bruins found a way to win. Olmark, 28 saves and 30 shots, gets hurt with Clifton falling on him inadvertently. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell if it was like the full split from him trying to make the save at first, but then you see Clifton, maybe it was a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
But Swayman comes in relief, makes 6 saves and 6 shots. Krejci had 2, the first one, nice patience on display to wait out Kochetkov. The now $8 million man, he got a 4-year, $8 million contract extension recently from the Hurricanes. Nice piece of business for them. The second goal was almost reversed for goaltender interference, but thank God the refs nailed this one because it would have been super frustrating.
Yep.
That should be the end of story. If somebody is pushing someone into the goalie, it is not goalie interference, or like trapping them from essentially getting out of the goalie's grill.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, like that should be the end of it. And it's one of those situations too, if it takes you that long to make a decision, it's not conclusive that
you don't change likely. It. Yep.
But you know, certain cases can, you know, go against that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Pasternak with another homer. They're just letting it rip.
Later. Theme of the week. Yeah.
In OT, and Kochetkov was pissed. I think it was at the refs, but people respect.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. If he I was think it like was
the refs.
Okay. Yeah. I saw some people was like, is he going at a Bruins player? I didn't see, obviously, what happened, but.
I don't know. Maybe someone said something, but I'm leaning towards the refs. It was a bend, don't break kind of effort.
Sometimes. Yeah, I'd agree. This was a game to me where it's like they got down, and I'm like, I'll find a way to get out of this. Like, anytime this season with how well they've played, I find it's crazy because in years past, I would have been the complete opposite. Like, oh, they're down. You know, they're going to struggle to find a way to get back into this game because that's just kind of the mentality of the team. This year, it's the complete opposite. It's like they get down a goal or two. It's like, all right, they'll give them a period. They'll figure it out. They'll come back and blow doors off whatever team they do. And usually that's been the case. And that's, again, just I think to give Montgomery just as much credit as possible, because we've talked about it already enough this season, that like the mentality of the team is completely different. The makeup is different. And they're just continuing to find ways to win games. Like they're blowing teams out. They're winning close games. They don't show really any signs of slowing down, which is great. And it's been an insanely entertaining season so far to watch.
Yeah. They can't lose at home. It's unbelievable. Like they are never out of a game. They truly aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa last night, at home this time, a 3-1 win, 19-3, Jeremy Swayman. I feel like this is the first game in a little bit since the injury we've seen him get back to his form.
Nails.
27 saves on 28 shots is really good. Forbert and Frederick returned to the lineup, so that's nice. First fully healthy look, sans Olmark, but I guess you could say fully healthy because we had Swayman. You know, we did have an NHL goalie for the Bruins in the mix. This was the Taylor Hall show, and the first goal was thanks to Brandon Carlo. The second goal is thanks to Nick Foligno. And that's pretty nice to be able to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Nick Foligno.
Can't say enough good things about him this year.
It's like, it's like they got a new like replacement Foligno and just didn't tell anybody. It's unbelievable.
Turn back the clock 4 or 5 years.
He is playing better than he has at any point in the last like 4 or 5 years.
Seems like it. I mean,
it's crazy, dude. He looks like he like de-aged 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I mean. You can't find one thing to like even nitpick about it. I know last year we were all over him, and rightfully so, because he wasn't good. This year, it's just like he has everything he's touched and everything he's done. Like there has not been one negative thing that you can say about him at all this season.
Yeah, like last year, he's just an offensive black hole. No creativity with the puck. Mm-hmm. This year, he has it. He's more engaged in the forecheck. He's still a good defensive presence. He's ridiculous. He fills in for the goalies if one of them is out with the hugs.
True. Yep. He's the go-to guy for that. Yep.
He's a complete vibes guy, and it's the best. He's actually living up to the $3.8 million he makes. It's just nice to not have to worry about Nick Foligno all the time now. It's a huge boost. Like, the Bruins are at a point where they're so good that they can put Taylor Hall on their third line and have it work, and they can have Nick Foligno contributing on the fourth line.
Yep, that's insane. Like, I forgot they played Hall. Watching that game last night, I forgot they flipped Zacha and Hall, because I for sure thought Hall was still up on the second line. Yeah, I know, right? But the thing, too, about Taylor, like you said, the Taylor Hall show, I mean, the fact that he has turned into just, I mean, it's got to be the bird playing with Bergeron, that effect of just being around him. The fact that Taylor Hall has turned into such a phenomenal two-way player, because I feel like that doesn't get talked about enough, maybe from an outside standpoint, like the complete overhaul to his game he's had from being a guy that, at least to me, the first half, you know, a couple of years of his career, just being a straight up scorer, like, he has turned into a complete two-way player and has quietly had an excellent season.
Yeah, he's a force. Jake DeBrusk has become a much better, you know, two-way player as well. It's just, this team's just ridiculous.
They roll out four lines every, I mean, it obviously say they roll out four lines, but, like, it's four legitimate. This is the deepest Bruins team we've had in, I don't know how long. Years. Like, probably maybe since the, I don't know. I'm trying to remember back Bruins teams. I don't want to go all the way back to the 11 team, but, like, maybe.
Pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's insane. Give credit to Don Sweeney, I guess. We ripped him apart in the offseason, and things are, minus, again, one stupid move, things are looking pretty good right now when it comes to him.
Yep. They certainly are, man. It's crazy. And, like, Hall talked about it too last night. Like, he doesn't see it as much of a demotion. Like,
that's what I was wondering that. I'm like, yeah.
Damn, it's really not. And it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, yeah, because
you got solid talent. I mean, you can get demoted to, like you said, to the third line, but your third line center is Charlie Coyle. Like, is it really a demotion? Like,
yeah, like he said, we're 19-3-0. Or whatever it is, so wherever you're slotted, you got to make the best of your time. And Charlie Coyle, as a third line center, that's one of the best third line centers in the league. So I don't take it as a demotion.
There you go.
Like, guy that's completely bought in ever since he got here. So, not super surprising to see, but just awesome to see that reinforcement and, you know, the belief of the group. Up next, you got Colorado twice and Vegas, so that's fun.
This is a barometer week, for sure. Yeah, they're good, but, I mean, this is – you really kind of throw it all out there and see what you're made of type of thing.
Yep, exactly. You got the Avalanche first on Saturday. They're 12-6-1, underachieving a little bit, but third in the Central. Mikko Rantanen is one of the top scorers in the league, 29 points in 20 games. Landeskog has not played yet. He's still recovering. And Nichushkin has been out since the 25th, but they're still good, man. Like, it just makes you wonder, you know, with these injuries, what they're going to be like when Landeskog and Nichushkin are healthy. But still a really good team, still a threat even without those guys. Vegas has come back down to earth a little bit after a scorching start. They're 17-6-1, first in the Pacific. Jack Eichel is playing like we know Jack Eichel is capable of. 26 points in 24 games, leads the team plus minus by a big margin too. I think he's like plus 15 or something. Potential Bruce Cassidy revenge game. This is his return. I hope he gets a positive, you know, welcome back. But
I was going to ask, what do you think? I can't imagine you're going to get many boos. I don't know why people would.
Should be but goofy.
Like, I'm sure there'll be some a-holes in the crowd that'll like blame him for not, you know,
especially with the
cup finals loss or whatever.
Like, world record pace right now too.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, like, some people might think he was the problem. Like,
that's kind of where I'm at. It's like, I hope they don't think, you know, not that I'm saying that they would be in this position with him, because I feel like, I feel like I have to kind of walk back on my comments of him being like the scapegoat, and, you know, the blame the players more than the coach, because I think you're seeing it. Like, the players obviously needed a change of not scenery, but a different voice, different face in the locker room, and it's clearly worked out for both teams. Like you said, Vegas is playing really well, so. You know, no ill feelings or, you know, ill words to Bruce Cassidy because of, you know, what he's been able to do.
Yep. I actually messed up. I said 12-6-1 earlier for the Avalanche. They're 12-7-1. But yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, any reasonable fans in that same camp. They have Colorado again this time. It'll be next Wednesday. So a week from today, we'll be on the road in Colorado this time. I think that wraps it up for Bruins. Things are going pretty good.
I'd say so. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, just kind of, this is. Again, this is what you're made of week. Like, I don't want to say you should be able to steal some of these games, but I think you're right up there with these this type of competition. But it should be very entertaining and very interesting games to see what the Bruins have in store, what, you know, obviously the defending Stanley Cup champions and a pretty good Vegas team has to put up.
Yep, exactly. Speaking of teams that are just playing out of their minds,
Celtics. In the water at the Garden. Like, figure out what's going on. What are they feeding the players? What's going on in that building under the curtain? Like,
it's unbelievable. I saw this earlier. I actually have to dig up and find it now. I sent it to a friend earlier. Where is it? Boston improved to 20-0 at home dating back to April 16th, including playoffs, became the fifth team in NHL history to reach 20 consecutive home victories, regular season and playoffs, joining the 75-76 Flyers, the 11-12 Red Wings, the 84-85 Flyers, and the 29-30 Bruins.
Jesus, it's a long time ago. But, I mean, I just said it with the Bruins team, how just dominant and complete that team is. Kudos to Brad Stevens, like we did kudos to Don Sweeney, because Brad Stevens has put together an absolute freaking monster of a basketball team this year. Every player, it doesn't matter who it is, has seemingly stepped into some sort of role and has just absolutely excelled in that, starting with, of course, the stars, Jaylen Brown. I know we'll get to Jason Tatum in a second, because I wanted to bring up a prediction that you had at the start of the NBA season that is looking pretty damn good right now. So kudos to you there. And, you know, a prediction that we both had. Give credit to Joe Mazzulla, too. He's been a phenomenal job as a head coach. He's kind of come into his own here and is, again, putting that prediction of you and I saying, you know, he's going to win NBA Coach of the Year. Off to a pretty good start. You know, the best team in the NBA, that coach tends to get that award. So hopefully he can keep that up. But back on the players, Jaylen Brown, I know I said I'll get to Tatum in a second. He is quietly having just as good of a season as Jason Tatum. Brown is setting career highs in points per game, field goal percentage, free throws percentage, and rebounds so far this year. He's been excellent, averaging 26.1 points per game. Marcus Smart has really taken to that true point guard role that you and I have talked about before that this team maybe needed. You saw that the other night, has set a career high assists in a game with 15 against the Hornets on Monday. This season, he's averaging 7.5 assists. That's a career high. Last year, he had 5.9. He set that as a career high. And then this was from Celtics senior writer Taylor Snow on Twitter. He said that Marcus Smart has handed out the fifth most assists in the NBA this season, trailing only Tyrese Halliburton, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, and Nikola Jokic. From StatMuse, I know, throwing Nikola Jokic in there is kind of wild. But the fact that he's a center too. And then from StatMuse, this said Marcus Smart has had 5 10 assist games last year. He has 5 this season, and there's still 61 games to go. So Marcus Smart, kudos to him. He has truly, you know, bid in on that true point guard role, you know, be the facilitator first, not the scoring guy, and still obviously an elite defender. And then Al Horford's been great too. He's been steady Al. The new guys, they have stepped in great. Malcolm Brogdon, the guy we picked as, you know, sixth man of the year, he's making a case for that. When he's needed off the bench to come in to score, he's been excellent. When he's needed to start, he's been great, averaging 14 points per game. You know, he's been a great veteran presence. I listened to his post-game interview a couple nights ago, I think after the Charlotte game, where he talked about, you know, just being a voice for some of the younger guys and talking about, you know, don't take things for granted. You know, there are worse situations in the NBA than this place. If you ever feel down about stuff like that. So we've talked about it before. He has been that veteran voice the team seemingly has needed the last couple of years. Blake Griffin and Noah Vonleh, they haven't gotten a ton of playing time, but they've played well in their minutes that they have. Blake Griffin turned back the clock the other night, as you had in the preview for the show tonight on Twitter, the one-handed tomahawk jam that he put up the other night against Charlotte. That was awesome to see. The bench obviously loved that. Noah Vonleh, he's been a good, again, just, you know, defensive presence filling in for Rob Williams. You know, he's more of a rebounds guy, but he's filled into that role nicely. And then the bench, it's been next man up. Every night it seems like somebody new is stepping up and filling in a great role. Derek White's been excellent. You know, he seemingly has, you know, found his footing in Boston after some rough moments last year, obviously coming over in the trade deadline. Sam Hauser and Grant Williams have turned into sharpshooters. Sam Hauser, I think, has the third best 3-point percentage in the NBA. You know, he's been a great asset off the bench, which is crazy to think about. Grant Williams, his ascension as a scorer off the bench is just continuing to, you know, to rise as the season goes on. And then you have guys like Peyton Pritchard and Luke Kornet, who are just basically spark plug guys. They've been excellent in moments too. Pritchard, you know, comes in, drains some threes. Luke Kornet's making, you know, alley-oop dunks all over the place, blocking guys, you know, doing the whatever the hell the bird, that emote or that motion was the other night. Was great to see. So the team as a whole has played fantastic. I can't say it enough. I'm trying not to ramble here. Just, I know I'm throwing a lot of people, but the fact that this is, you know, as deep as it's been, This team, it's like I said, every night it seems like someone is stepping up. When guys sit out, whether it's Tatum, you know, sits out a game, Jaylen Brown steps up. If Brown's out, Tatum goes for 40, another guy step up around him. It's kind of crazy. Like I said, we're kind of in the same spot with the Bruins, that every night someone stepping up, playing great. It's as a team, a whole, as a team, it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, they're just ridiculous. They put up 78 points in the first half against the Hornets the other night. And didn't Tatum not play in that game? Was that the game Tatum didn't play?
No, that was the game Tatum didn't play in, I think, was the Washington game, and they still put up 126 in that game. That's what I mean. They're blowing. I know the Washington game was close, but they are on a historic offensive pace. They're, again, the Charlotte Hornets are not a good basketball team. They didn't have any of their, you know, actual starters the other night, but they're still blowing doors off teams, you know, blowing teams out of the building. They're winning close games. They're, I know we just talked about the Bruins. They're doing the same thing the Bruins are. Like, I know people, Celtics and Bruins fans have been watching. They say the same thing, but like, it's kind of crazy that both these teams can win. And it seems like any way, shape or form, like I said, they have players stepping up night in and night out, two very similar teams that are both off to tremendous starts.
Yeah, I mean, friggin' Brogdon has been perfect. Smart just somehow continues to get better. They can be without Brown or Tatum one night and still win by like 30. Like,
it's insane. Again, it just goes into the coaching of Missoula, the roster construction. That's the thing too. Is there the one negative you can maybe take away is, you know, a lot of these teams are. The Celtics have big leagues, but they tend to give them up from time to time. I think you saw that tonight. I've been trying to keep an eye on this game. And at one point, I think they were up like 30-10. And then the next minute I looked up, it was 44-44 playing the Heat. So defense has been a little bit of a problem if you have one thing to nitpick about the Celtics. But again, they're the best team in the NBA. They're, you know, putting up 140 points a night, it seems like. I said it to a buddy of mine. They're basically an all-star team with how much they're scoring. You said it. Rob Williams is coming back soon. The report a couple weeks ago was from Woj. He said Rob Williams, the timetable for him is right around Christmas. He was out practicing today, you know, scrimmaging, was working in the paint, blocking shots. The way they're going right now, I don't know if I would rush it. Like, I don't want to say they're rushing him back for Christmas, because if that's the timetable, then that's the timetable. But like, if they continue to play like this and he still maybe needs a week or maybe a month off, I don't know if I'd bring Rob Williams back. Like, I would wait as long as I possibly could with him, get him as healthy as you possibly can, and then go with that. Because that's just, again, that's how good this team's been. The fact, I know we talked about it in the offseason, you know, if there was a move to make at the deadline or whatever, maybe go out and get another center, because you don't really know how Luke Kornet's going to factor in. Or, you know, if Blake Griffin can give you good minutes. Kornet's been awesome, like, which is crazy to say. And just think about that Luke Kornet's been an actual factor on this team. Same thing with Blake Griffin and Noah Vonleh. So if you can hold out as long as you can with Rob Williams, don't get me wrong, I'd love him back. But the main thing for them right now with him should be getting him as fully 100% healthy as you possibly can. And if that takes a couple extra games or days or whatever, I wouldn't be opposed to doing that. I don't know if you feel differently, if you're more on the mindset of as soon as he can come back, get him back out there, or what your kind of thought process is with Rob Williams moving forward.
Yeah, I'm not in any rush for Williams if they deem it, you know, necessary to play it slow with him, because I mean, this team is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Speaks for itself.
Absolutely.
Like, they're doing this without him. They will be better with him. But
yeah, I mean, their defensive problems.
Like, if this is like a one-time thing, a guy that's, you know, not known for being injury prone, it's different. But we know Rob Williams is injury prone.
Exactly. You're kind of holding your breath on him a lot of the time, but
yeah. So there's just no need to.
Mm-hmm.
The depth has been stupendous.
That's stupendous. A great adjective. One other, you know, thing that's been stupendous, like I said, I alluded to earlier, the one guy we haven't talked about yet, save the best for last, literally in this case, Jason Tatum is your MVP of the NBA right now. Like, he has been absolutely excellent. Points for you picking that months before it's going to happen. If there was any other doubts about it, I think he had 28 points in the first half tonight, you know, carrying the Celtics at times. He shut down my NBA pick for MVP, Luka Doncic, a couple games ago. This was from Chris Forsberg after that game. The game, of course, the Celtics beat the Mavericks. Said, quote, Jason Tatum, when defended by Luka, 15 points on 5-of-8 shooting in a minute and 57 seconds of matchup time. When Luka was defended by Tatum, he scored just 2 points on 1-of-2 shooting Two turnovers, one block for Tatum in a minute 12. Defensive data isn't perfect, but the NBA tracking had Celtics scoring 31 points on 12 of 19 shooting versus Luka. Tatum allowed 6 points on 3 of 5 field goals with two blocks for Tatum. And then this is from NBA Muse on Twitter, just to back up how great of a season Tatum has had. Said, quote, Jason Tatum this season has had career highs in points per game, assists per game, blocks per game, field goal percentage, free throw percentage. That's the big thing for me, is how assertive he has looked and just getting to the free throw line and wanting to score there, as opposed to, you know, times last year where he really didn't do that. And you and I kind of questioned that, like, you're a big guy, why don't you go to the basket and score that way? He's done that this year. To finish off this tweet, says Celtics have the best record in the NBA, MVP question mark. And I think the answer to that is absolutely, you know, maybe he doesn't have the stats as other guys, because he is, I think, fifth right now in points per game behind Luka, Steph, Shai Gilgeous, or Alexander, which is crazy to think that, you know, he's the third leading scorer in the NBA for that OKC team. And then Giannis is fourth. But what Tatum's doing for this team, like I said, at times, if the Celtics need him to carry, he carries. If he needs to facilitate, he facilitates and gets other guys involved. He's playing defense at an elite level this season, which I think is the first time we're really seeing that. I know he was great in the playoffs last year, but this year there's just some sort of different maybe mentality around that, or he's, you know, making what'd you say?
Fuel for that loss last year.
It seems like it. That's the other point I was going to make, is it seems like, and you could say the same thing about Brown. I was going to, and I completely forgot. It looks like the two of them are really, and the whole team as a whole, but those two guys specifically, seems like they took last year's NBA Finals loss to heart, and, you know, said, and they've said it before too, that, you know, they don't often want to feel that way again. They look like men on missions this year, and Tatum especially, with, again, how assertive he's played and how he wants to get other guys involved, and isn't afraid to give the ball up at times. And if one guy's hot, you know, give the ball to Brown, give the ball to Smart, let them get their minutes and their moments. But then too, like, if they need someone to take over, he did it again the other night, in that Charlotte game. Like, if he needs a basket, I'm going to the basket, getting it, whether I want to, you know, get the and one too. He's been excellent, and you can't say enough good things about him.
MVP.
All right. Fair guy. Enough. Great. Great on you for being able to see the future and predict that. Yeah. Cause
he's just ridiculous, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been really hard to comprehend how good both the Bruins and the Celtics are, because I just didn't expect this level of dominance.
It's almost, I don't know, they're not doing it because, I mean, they're not conscious of it, but, like, it's almost like they're, like, one-upping each other, or, like, trying to see how they can one-up each other night after night. Like, the Bruins have a come-from-behind victory. Celtics will do that the next night. The Bruins will blow somebody off the ice. The Celtics come out and win a game by 32 points like they did the other night against Charlotte, or whatever it ended up being. Like, now they're going back. They have a back-and-forth game with Miami tonight. It's kind of the same thing I said about the Bruins earlier. Like, if the Celtics get down, or, you know, aren't playing great, you have a feeling where it's like, all right, they're going to figure it out at some point. They'll, you know, Tatum will go on a run where he goes for 15 points in a couple of minutes, or someone like White will come off the bench and hit a couple of threes, get you right back in the game. Like, it's the same thing I said about the Bruins earlier, where it never feels like they're out of a game, really, no matter how much they're down, because they haven't really given you any indication that that's going to be the case this year. Like, they have handled their business pretty well. And just, again, they're out. I feel like it looks like they're out for blood this year. They're pissed about how last year ended. They're maybe pissed about how the offseason went. And obviously the Udoka stuff that we have kind of, we've come past, but they look like they're out to just kind of say F you to the rest of the league. We're here and we're not going anywhere anytime soon.
I love it.
I do too. It's great. That's how they should act when they have the talent that they do, when they have arguably the best player in the NBA right now.
Been a long time coming.
Absolutely. Right there with you.
It's all built to this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode.
I think so.
All right, so anybody who didn't hear it at the beginning, we will unfortunately have to take another week off next week due to a work conflict I have Wednesday night, and not being able to, with Ryan's work schedule, be able to find another day to record.
Find a makeup, so yep.
I guess it's just some holiday time off, and we'll be refreshed from it. So
maybe I'll make another TikTok.
Hey, we'll make another TikTok.
I came out of my, like, 3-month or however it was hibernation to do a quick Patriots minute.
Yep, exactly. That was episode 121, part one. For anybody,
there you go. Yep.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter, me at @Mike_Craddy, Ryan at @Ryan_Salvaggio, and the show at @SalandCraddyPod. You can find us on TikTok, throw Salvaggio and Craddy in the search bar. Rate and review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts if you wish. And we'll see you next week. We hope you had nice Thanksgivings, or 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks,
We hope you had nice Thanksgivings. We're approaching the Christmas season. Well, we're kind of already in there, but we're getting closer and closer to the day itself, so that's exciting. Enjoy the holiday season. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Peace out.